we're playing a trio by Beethoven and a trio by Mendelssohn. The Mendelssohn is a far better known piece. I guess it's one of the best known trios for violin, cello, and piano in the entire repertoire. And the Beethoven is, I mean, everything by Beethoven is sort of well known, but this is one of the lesser known, at least to me, I mean to us, of the trios we've played. And you and I have talked about the Ghost Trio by Beethoven, which we played during the summer, and we've also played a couple times over the years, and the Archduke, which we played in the summer. Those are the two really famous ones, and then some of the others are well known, but this is a trio, the Beethoven, that's kind of a, was written by Beethoven as a kind of companion piece to the Ghost Trio, but seems to me, at least, to inhabit a whole different world, kind of emotionally, and even, at least as far as the cello part goes, even technically. So it's a lot of fun.
You have a couple of concerts throughout the year. How do you decide which pieces you're going to play for each concert?
Some of it is practical considerations. When can we play? When can the three of us rehearse? We all have trio rehearsals, but we also have very separate schedules as well. So some of it is practical. Then I think the more artistic considerations are what repertoire pieces might go well together for us to perform as well as for audiences to listen to, because a performance is an emotional journey. And we think about beginning, middle, and end, and how the stylistic differences and how the musical styles and journeys will gel well together.
Yeah, I might add one thing to that. When the department hired Mei Shun, we three knew we were going to play trios together, and so we started this flood of emails before she was even in town about what would you like to play, what would you like to play, what, as Erging said, what would we have time to rehearse, what goes well together. And so we ended up with four programs for the academic year, two in the fall and two in the spring.
Well, Michelle, I'm going to ask, because we have two-thirds of a Fulbright trio that you have played with Yura for how many years?
Well, a long time,
right?
Let's say.
You're the new kid on the block.
Yes.
So how does it work when you come in and you're working with two-thirds of a trio that has experience with someone else? Does it gel immediately? Is there a period of handshakes and then you sit down and just play together?
I think what is important for the chamber music, of course, we need to get along with each other really well, which I think Stephen and Erging has, like, both have wonderful personality. So I like them first. Then when we go to the music, I think, like, music's the common language. So what we find on the music, I think we talk about that, we discuss about that, we rehearse. And then when we perform, I think once our idea is the same or we aim for the same thing, I think the music formed by itself doesn't have need to be like talk so much, but the music shows everything. Yeah.
So we have a violin, a cello, and a piano. With the violin and the cello, it's your own instrument and you get to have it with you. With the piano, you kind of show up and use what's there. Is there a challenge to that?
Yes, sometimes like the piano, if like different brand or in different room sounds different. So I think pianists always like want to try the piano, like I did today. I came here 10 minutes earlier, want to like know how the touches or like how the sonority or even the pedal is work the same way like the piano I used to have, or yeah, the color, if like how much weight I need to put to make the tone I want. So I think it's always good for pianists to try the piano at least a little bit before the play in the performance.
And that, of course, matters to the cellist and the violinist, too, how the piano is going to sound.
Absolutely.
I was eavesdropping, and when the three of you were kind of setting up and making yourselves at home here in the Furman Garner Performance Studio, I heard Erging and Stephen talking about line of vision. But do you like to see each other?
Yes, yeah. In capital letters. And what we need to, we try to sit where all three of us can see,
yeah,
all of us, so to speak, every permutation of three. So that, but in particular, an awful lot of trios, including the Mendelssohn that we're going to play some of today, seem to me at least substantially kind of like a, almost like a duo sonata, where the violin and the cello will have a lot of either stuff together or back and forth kind of thing, with the piano doing something fundamentally different. And so in particular, and especially, you know, since we're playing the same kind of instruments, you know, instruments with a bow and, mm-hmm. and that sort of thing, that we really need to be able to see each other as well as hear each other. Mm-hmm. And we also need to be able to see Meshum.
Yeah. I might just add that it's not solely an aural experience with chamber music or a solely visual experience, but I think there needs to be lots of different elements working in combination with each other.
Do you communicate visually? I mean, during the performance?
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you know, we because there's no, for example, I mean, this is obvious, but there's no conductor. Mm-hmm. And so if we want to slow down or speed up, we somehow have to communicate that to each other so that, you know, so that we play together.
Interesting.
Now, in a trio, you're not just worried about how you sound. You have to worry about how everybody is sounding together. Mm-hmm. So when you're in the middle of a performance, I mean, how can you make sure that, like, the volume, for example, is where it needs to be, that somebody's not louder than someone else or other considerations you have to think about?
You learn to adjust to a room, I think. I think that comes with experience, and it only continues to get better, I think, in terms of the amount of adjustment that it requires on your part and the amount of perception time it takes to understand the kind of sound that you're producing right from an earshot versus how it may sound 20 feet or 50 feet away. And then, of course, you can always have a musician you trust be in the hall and say, tell me what you hear.
Sometimes we try to listen to each other. Like, one of us will go to the back of the audience, and we listen to, like, the other two of them to tell the balance. Yeah.
Yeah, and we're lucky, I mean, in this sense, when we play anywhere around in Fayetteville, we get to rehearse in the space some ahead of time. And because we started rehearsing right as the beginning of school here, our own Stella Boyle Smith Hall is at the very beginning of school. We can get in more than once we get into the flow of things when there are recitals almost every night in there. So we've had some time in there already, and we'll get a little more. So we rehearse in there and try, you know, to work on those balance issues that you speak of.
Stella Boyle Smith, it's free.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're going to perform some Mendelssohn here in mm-hmm. a moment for us. Shall we know that you'll be on the Mary Baker Rumsey piano here at AYF. I'd like to know just a little bit more about the instruments the two of you will play.
You go first.
I am playing on a modern instrument. It's a farolo. He is a maker based in upstate New York. And it's not a very interesting story. He was a friend of my former violin teacher when I was in undergrad, and they went to Juilliard together. And when I, of course, was shopping for instruments, I asked my teachers for recommendations. And I tried a couple of instruments, and I ended up purchasing this one.
And you have four bows with you in the case.
I do. Some of them are spare bows. I sort of equate them as paintbrushes for an artist. You want to have different tools, and of course you want to be able to have the technique to create any color you want with a single bow, but I think I consider it a luxury to have as many bows as I do.
Yeah. My cello is of sort of unknown origin. It has a label in it which has to be incorrect, and that's a long and not all that interesting story. But it's probably a couple hundred years old, and as I say, I don't really know who made it. I don't know if I think that if I took it to people who do those kinds of appraisals, I don't know if everyone would even agree, because it's sometimes hard to tell unless it's made by a very, very famous maker like a Stradivarius. Everybody studied that so much that they know those pretty well. So, and I've had it for about 20 years, and it's a nice cello. I feel very at home with it, let's say.
Could you tell us a little bit about the Mendelssohn before you play?
Well, he wrote two trios, I can say that much. And as I said earlier, this one is the better known of the two. It's in the sort of standard four movements. It's in the key of D minor. Do either of you know how old he was? it was a mature composer, certainly, when he wrote this.
All I know is the opus number.
Yeah. Oh, it's opus 49, right? And I mean, I at least don't think of the opus numbers as being sort of as significant as they are in, say, Beethoven or something like that. But it has, as I say, I think people will recognize it. I know when PJ was here, it was a favorite piece of hers to play over the radio, and it has one of – Mendelssohn is very famous for writing these really charming and exciting and wonderful scherzo movements, fast and light, so to speak. And this has one of the very best scherzo movements, which they're going to have to come to the concert to listen to, because what we're going to play today is the first movement.
Excellent. It's free. Yep. It's Thursday night, Stella Boyle Smith.
September 15th.
Right.
And there is a reception following.
Is there cake?
There is cake.
Excellent.
You'll have to come.
Yes. All right. We'll get set up and listen. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.